Hello, friends and folks, and welcome to the podcast formerly known as the Playlist Podcast, now known as Refresh Rate. Did you know that we went a while naming this the Playlist Podcast without thinking about the fact that we have another podcast that says Playlist in it, and also that's a really generic name?
Yeah, more specifically, like the podcast that existed for a while, but it was just, well, this is like the Playlist, even though it has nothing to do with music.
It's like when sites are like, hey, check out our section, the download, where we update you on news.
Welcome to We're Up. Nobody old enough for that one?
Nope, okay, no. Cool. Well, or...
this is old Kotaku, what are you playing?
Oh, that! I thought you were saying We're Up.
Well, we are awake. We are speaking. We are up.
Mm-hmm. What's up?
Not much, Six Detmar.
All right, well, thanks for joining us then. I guess we don't have much to talk about.
We do have stuff.
Previously we would talk about, you know, like games we've been playing lately, and that's still on the table, but it might not be a game that we bring to the table now, because actually if you look at our output, we do more non-game crit than game crit.
Yeah, like we do a fair amount of game crit, to be clear. Like we have, you know, Novel Not New, that's the, you know, narrative, you know, games. And then sometimes we'll have podcasts about specific games. You have UDR and now, like, Her Majesty's Secret Playlist about, like, James Bond games. But it's, like, in terms of just, hey, this game came out, even that, it tends to be, like, we have specific game coverage, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because they'll be like, oh, amongst our friends, we're like, hey, this new game is coming out. It seems super hot and cool. Let's all, you know, play it at the same time and record on it.
And that game turns out to be Mario Golf, and everyone comes away unhappy after the first day.
Well, you got that experience. I got to play things like Legends Arceus and Monster Hunter Rise. So, you know. In fact, and also one of the first podcasts I ever was on was a podcast like that, in which we talked about Breath of the Wild, like those, you know, nearly over 5 years ago.
Yeah. And then also Fire Emblem, right? Well, that was one of the early pods you were on.
Yeah. I think we did like a two-part thing. Regardless, when it comes to like game coverage, we don't tend to do broad game coverage. We try to like narrow it down to be like a game as it is coming.
We like to iris in, to focus in on some
Are you making fun of me, Six Detmar?
Yeah.
I knew it.
Is that a problem?
The fact is that we are three people with wildly disparate tastes in what we like doing, so having something
I wouldn't call our taste that disparate. But.
Right, like, I get, you know, I think, Jen, that is the good phrasing, that is the very, like, it sounds good to say, but I do feel it's slightly misrepresentative that I don't think we're that disparate.
Okay,
We have our areas of significant contrast, but I think we have a common core, if you will.
Yeah.
We do the weird thing with the boxes that makes math easy. I wish I knew how to do that.
It's bad. The common core is bad.
Is it?
It's not.
I mean, the common core as like a system overall is bad, particularly the way they teach math now, though, seems kind of cool. Anyway,
We've decided to open the door. We've decided that, like, well,
get on the floor, everybody walk the dinosaur.
Absolutely.
No, I will not allow anything to happen without distraction. Impossible.
Impossible. But yeah, it's just like we were talking about it. It's like, well, sometimes we play or check out different things, and it's like, let's open the door to check out other things, and just also, we don't have to do tons of prep or whatever. It's just what caught our attention in the month prior. Also, we're probably going to put these out more towards the end of the month for other reasons. It's also just easier sometimes, but regardless. But yeah, this is now Refresh Rate, which is a good name. It's good as hell, and we like it a lot.
This is the last image we're going to draw for the month before we hit refresh and get ourselves a new screen.
There it is.
And I know we each brought a work to talk about. I would like to go first because I think I have something that everyone has an opinion on, which is fun.
Yeah, it is true.
I am bringing to the table Neon White, the recently released first-person shooter platformer with a very like speedrunner emphasis. I played on PC.
I think it's also available on most consoles. I think it's
Switch? I know it's on Switch.
Yeah, I think it's just like, Switch and PC.
Okay. Yeah, I just wanted to be clear. But PC seems to be the place to play it.
Yeah, I mean, it's a speedrunning game, a speedrunning first-person game. So whatever, like, the gameplay is certainly very different, but you are doing a lot of, like, you know, Quake-style twitchy movement, and I would not recommend that on a console, on a controller. I don't think that's a good idea.
Yeah, so, it does support gamepad on PC as well, though, if you do choose to play that way.
Like right, if you don't want to do well, yeah.
Tell us about Neon White.
So Neon White, so you died, right?
Damn. I died?
Yeah, man. Yeah, you died. You didn't do great. Let me tell you something about yourself, because you don't remember yourself. You've got, I think it's very novel. This game is working with a rarely, like, referenced medical condition called amnesia. Where you don't remember things. Amnesia. I'm told it's amnesia. These weird medical terms.
Yeah, exactly. Who knows? So I bumped my head on my way to heaven, and I'm just like, well, I don't know who I am, except I have the Steve Blum A voice, I guess.
Oh, the you dark do have the descent. Steve Blum A voice.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Yes. Well, actually, it's not very dark at all, because you're in heaven. Good news. Bad news is you're not staying. You were a very bad person. But you were very good at being a very bad person, apparently. You were part of a group of, professional assassins. You were high up in the rankings. Leader gets a little complicated as you get into things. But you were one of the heads of a group of assassins. And they're like, hey, listen, welcome to heaven. We hate you and you suck. However, we are having this little problem with demons swarming and invading heaven. So we will allow you to stay here while you fight off the demons, and maybe you'll die in the process and, like, go to true hell or be obliterated or something kind of unclear. Or if you survive this, we're running this like a contest, and we just sort of keep repeating it. So if you survive this, you just get to go into the next round, and we'll start all over again. It'll be great. And you're like, well, that seems like a shitty deal, but I guess it seems a little better than going to hell. And then there are a bunch of other people who are part of this. They're like, hey, White, it's great to see you. And you're like, uh-huh. Yeah, great to see you too. Who are you?
Who are you?
So that is the plot of this game. You are fighting demons to sort of like earn your keep in hell. And it's a bit of a competition. And meanwhile, you're trying to figure out who you were and what your relationship was to these people and why you died. And let me tell you something about the writing. It's not great.
It is basically, what if a 2000s webcomic artist played Killer 7 or another Suda 51 game and was like, hey, I could do that. And that's basically what the writing is like here.
I don't think that's right. I understand why you say it, however. I think the writing is very inconsistent. And I think very often it leans on this like early 2000s internet humor go ahead.
I was just going to say also it's aesthetic in some ways, like while yes, it has a one thing I do like about Neon White is that it has like a pretty cool aesthetic, but it's cool because my formative years were in the early 2000s. So, you know, that sort of, like, sketchy, lanky character design is, like, something that I appreciate, so...
Sure, sure. The character design is definitely very, like, impressive DeviantArt of that era, right?
Oh, yeah, totally. I would have totally seen, like, fucking tall-ass Sasuke with, like, sketchy lines drawn like this, like Neon White.
Totally. And I think, yeah, in its worst moments, it does lean on, like, both this early... early aughts internet humor slash reference. And also, like, it has a little bit of Family Guy syndrome, where it mistakes the fact that it's referencing something to be material, like content, to be compelling in and of itself. You at one point you get the option to go see a movie in heaven, and you're seeing it with one of the angels who, well, I don't need to talk about the angels that much, but anyway, the angel hasn't seen this movie before, so you're explaining, and it becomes incredibly clear that you're watching The Matrix. It's like, oh, that's Agent Smith, and you're like, just saying that's Agent Smith isn't inherently a joke or interesting. Yeah. So at its worst, that's what it's like.
Sure. And also it seems like I would see Jen play it every now and again. I would look over, see her play, and it's like, oh, there are these visual novel segments as well, right? Where you talk to the characters, and is that as insufferable as I think it would be?
I mean, the people you're talking to, people who are that sort of person, right? And so sometimes they get into that kind of reference, but I think it works pretty well, right? The characters are of varying, you know, I would say there are three main characters you're interacting with. There's Green, but Green, at least for the beginning of the game, is not that central to it. There is Yellow, Red, and Purple. And they are different types of kind of internet persona in a way that I actually find like both nostalgic and sometimes quite good. Yellow is the one that I think Jen spent the most time with and is clearly the most cringe. He is just like a friendly internet forum bro.
Yeah. He's the one that's like basically various characters just to take the appearance of whoever the viewer wants them to be. So he's like, oh damn, John Cena's giving us missions, huh, bro? It's yeah.
You get much less of him as the game goes on. But like, I don't know, there is Red, who's like the femme fatale, but she is the funny internet version of the femme fatale, where she's like, you do something like, you know, badass, and you're like, wasn't that sick? Aren't you proud of me, Red? Like, in character, he's so eager to please her. And she's like, that wasn't bad for a baby. And he's like, oh, come on, tell me how sexy I am. And she, one of her lines is like, I can't tell a baby they're sexist, that's illegal. It's like, she's funny, she's genuinely funny.
Okay, that's because there are so many ways in which that character, basically it's in the early 2000s, a bunch of fucking nerds would like watch the Animated Adventures of Batman and saw Harley Quinn, and it was like, I could do that character.
Well, that's a different character.
Yeah, she's not doing crazy, and she's also not doing like thirst trap femme fatale. She is just the person that clearly everyone has a crush on, and she knows it and thinks it's funny, and that's great.
Right. I just generally think when I see that type of character, it's like, oh, this is totally going to become that kind of character. That's kind of what
I see.
Yeah.
But even with characters like Yellow, who does have that kind of side to him, one, I do find it kind of endearing because I grew up during this period, I knew people who talked like this, and he's not as insufferable, right? Like, I don't like this kind of way of talking, but it seems earnest enough. And then also, you just get moments of actual sincerity that are disarming and interesting, right? Where, like, he is broing out with you, right? And you all work together, right? And they all have their memories and you don't. And he's just like, he's like, you know, like, bro, like, he's just like, you and me, we're just like Naruto and Sasuke. And you're like, all right, thanks, man. And then he pauses. He's like, I know it wasn't your fault, though. And you're like, wait, what? It's like, you know, what happened? And you're like, I don't know what happened. He's like, it doesn't matter, don't worry about it. You're like, dude, hey, let's talk about this. So the moments of sincerity, I think, work reasonably well. However, none of this actually matters because it's just fun as fuck to play.
Yeah, that's what we were kind of not belaboring the point, but beating around the bush that it seems like the big draw of this game is its main gameplay, and it seems like a lot of fun if you are keyed into what it's going for.
Yeah, it's like the Super Meat Boy of first-person shooters in how it has you, like, learning a mechanic or two every few levels and using them to, like, okay, you finished it, now get an even better time, and maybe find secret items that allow you to unlock secret levels later.
And the tuning of Super Meat Boy was always something I objected to. I always feel like it was tuned a little too hard and a little too fussy in a way that I didn't find fun. Especially, like, I mean, the beginning levels were, like, fine, but quickly you got to points where it's like, okay, wall jump around, like, shards of glass for 5 minutes straight, and it just felt bad to me. And Neon White, I haven't completed the game yet, and even once I complete the game, I'll be going back for, you know, better times on levels and stuff, but there are multiple endings, by the way. But I am more than halfway through the game, I would say maybe two-thirds, and the levels are starting to get kind of hard, but, like, it's never really like, gosh, can I beat this level? It's like, okay, I'm going to beat this level. It may take me a couple of tries because there is such a quick restart and levels are so short, they often design the levels in a way where you have to figure out where to go and then sort of, like, do, like, a scouting run sometimes. And I think that's just part of their design, and it's fine. But the real fun is, like, you beat a level and you get your time, and it's like, okay, that's a silver medal. And you're like, okay, I can do that better, I guess. And you go again, and you do the perfect version of that, and you get a gold. And you're like, but there's a tier above this. There's Ace, which is like platinum. How the fuck do I do that? And there is, for every level, there is a basically an alternate route or approach. And sometimes it's very simple, right? Like some of the earlier levels, it's like, hey, instead of throwing your grenade at a person from a distance, throw it when you're close and use it to rocket jump. And that's as simple as it gets. But there are other ones where it's like, hey, if you do a triple rocket jump here, you can skip half the level. Or, hey, like, if you, instead of using this, like, using this ability to do, like, a dash attack, which consumes it, you instead use it as a gun, shoot twice, still have it, and then you have an extra dash to cross a gap that otherwise you wouldn't be able to cross. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it is figuring out these things and then trying to execute. And all of this feels very fun. Like, I think a lot of these style of games, I would be very happy being like, fuck it, I'm just glad I beat it. I'm not going back for a better medal. But the process of iteration in this game is really fun and really satisfying. Doesn't hurt that I think the game looks really good.
Mm-hmm.
I like the art style a lot.
Utterly gorgeous. And yeah.
Also the music, like, I don't think I'm going to like load this up on my headphones and like jam to it during a workout necessarily, but I think the music is very fun.
Mm-hmm. If I could bring up one thing, like roll it back just a little bit to like
the
iterative nature of the gameplay. So I haven't played this game. I've certainly watched you and Jen play it, but I'm specifically, it was the other night in which you were like, we're in a call and you were streaming it to a couple of our friends. I just remember for a solid like 5-10 minutes or whatever, we were all just kind of trying to work together to find the solution to get like a faster time, because the thing that Neon White seems to do really spectacularly well is that since the levels are so short and that the mechanics are so like laid out in such a way, and they're very, you know, use the cards and they have basically two uses, so it kind of limits your options, but you can start thinking through the problem where it's just like, okay, what if I tried crashing through this thing here or doing a double jump here or things like that. And I think that's really impressive and engaging because, like, that's kind of like the iterative process of, like, I imagine what, you know, speedrunner, like career speedrunners do, where they'll look at a section, they'll either A, use the tech that, like, other people have come up with, they look at, like, the videos, they look at, the, like, you know, the documentation or whatever, it's like, okay, if I do it on this frame, I get this result. And that's, like, its own fun. But you also, it allows you to capture that sensation of being the person who finds it, right? Like, I imagine, you know, AGDQ next year or whatever, there's probably going to be a Neon White run and it's going to look crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what this game inspires. But the fact is, like, it's one of those things in game design where it's like, you need, like, for these types of games to really work, you need to make it so accessible to the point where even someone who, it like you know, if you're not a speedrunner or whatever, you get to feel like one for a couple minutes, and that is in it of itself its own like little power trip.
Right, like it's difficult enough to make a game where you can have those, you know, SGDQ runs where they look sick as hell, right? It is a different level of thing to make it so that an average player can have those moments. We, as you say, like, not even just an average player, like, I was on the call and it was, like, you and, like, Nick and Harry and Alan.
Mm-hmm.
And Harry was giving tons of advice. Harry has never seen this game before.
Yeah,
Harry was the one who gave me the tip that finally got me, like, an ace on the level. It was like, well, why didn't you stop there? I was like, oh, yeah, that is the last piece of the puzzle. Thank you, Harry.
Yeah, it's like, that's what, like, by simplifying the tools in such a way, it gives people who are just passively observing it to be able to make that sort of jump. It helps that, you know, the game language, you know, like, kind of the verbs and nouns of first-person shooter are really well understood and established at this point. But also, it takes advantage of that. This is a game that, like, knows that for the majority of its audience, you've played, like, a first-person shooter on your PC before, right? Like, mm-hmm. I can appreciate, like, as much as I want, you know, games to be, like, treating everyone as sort of, this is your first, you know, you don't know if it's your first time ever playing this kind of game. I think for most video games, you should treat, you know, your audience like you've never played this type of game. But come on, sometimes you want a game that just says, okay, you know what's going on here, go.
Mm-hmm. But to that effect, I haven't played one of these games before. Like, these speedrunning games, I literally haven't.
Sure. I'm more specifically referring to, like, PC first-person shooter, but go on.
Sure, that's fair. That's fair.
Like, you know the language of, like, not just WASD to move and mouse to look around, like, specifically the idea of you embodying a character in first-person and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't mean to interrupt your point. But
no,
yeah,
you're fine. Yeah, I mean, I think I'm definitely going to play. I'm going to play all the way through this. I'm probably going to try, and at least there's a achievement for getting like ace, the highest level of metal on half the levels. I will at least get that because I've already done about 25% of the levels. And the iteration, as I say, is very fun to me. I'm sure, it will reach a point because, like, there was a batch of, I think I'm like 9 sets of levels in,
mm-hmm.
and like the 7th set there were a couple of levels where I was like, I mean, I'll come back for medals at some point, but good god, that was a lot. Like an ace run of this level, I know, is just going to be like non-stop using cards and doing very specific angles on abilities, and it just seems like it's gonna be a lot. So
yeah, it's definitely a game that I've ended up playing a little bit more than I thought, because it's kind of fun to challenge other people's leaderboard scores. Like, I've even added a few new people on my Steam friends list just so I could compare times and have a little bit of competition there.
Mm-hmm.
I am coming into it with a little bit of baggage, just because, like, Ben Esposito's the designer here, and he's the one who did Donut County, which even after he removed all the indigenous references in the game, it was still kind of that same game.
Mm-hmm.
To the point where, like, it refers to specific things like raccoons as trash animals, and it's like, okay, this kind of sucks. But and I've also heard from some people who said that some of the imagery this game's using doesn't seem like it's quite the best way to use it. But it's hard for me to put it into my own words for that stuff, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe I'll have to do some reading, because with such vagaries, I can't really say much. I will say, I don't know about the places you live. Raccoons literally raid and eat trash.
Oh, I know. There's just a way that it's written that's very, like.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Fair. Yeah. I mean, every time you've heard me, every time, like, one of our neighbors puts their trash out on the curb, the night before, not the morning of. It's like, that's how you get raccoons.
I can do that out here in California because we don't have raccoons out here. Yeah. We got coyotes, but they don't care about that. They're busy looking for
cats. Like, yeah.
Cats and dogs. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Keep the damn cats indoors.
But yeah, it's a pretty fun game. Just wish I didn't have like previous misgivings about the creator, and also I wish that the writing didn't make me want to bang my head into the keyboard.
Sure, sure. I find it less egregious than Jen does, but I also don't, like, there are moments where I find it good. I generally don't find it good. That's not my argument. My argument is just sort of, it's bad in a way that feels, like, nostalgically familiar and reminds me of my time on the Kingdom Hearts Insider forums. Like, oh, sure, yeah. I know this guy.
Sure, yeah.
So, this guy who's like, what's your nobody name? And you're like, well, the rule is you add an X to, and they're like, my name is XX Doug. And you're like, that doesn't make any sense, Doug.
start my Naruto RP where I just go, hi, I'm Naruto. What's up, Kakashi? Thread dies instantly.
So yeah, that's Neon White. It's just fun. I would play it if I were you, but if none of what I've said sounds appealing, then, you know, then it's not appealing, and that's fine.
Yeah.
Do you want to break some new ground for us, Kyrie?
I think it's, with how big of a topic it kind of is, I think Jez should go next.
Okay. I'm only like a few chapters into it. Not super far in, but I did kind of focus on Card Shark, which is the latest game from Nerial. People who are mostly responsible for Reigns, which is, depending on which version of Reigns you're playing, can be a fantastic game. Like, I even have the unopened board game sitting behind me. Just need to find people to play it with. But yeah, this is something that's slightly different for them, because it does share some of that same DNA as Reigns in terms of, like, it's getting you to, you're basically working within a system to survive, more or less, along with intense pressure, but the way that you're surviving is a bit different here, because Card Shark is about cheating at cards, not playing at cards, which a lot of people went in thinking that it was about playing actual games of cards, but that's not what you're doing here at all. It's, you play this basically bar hand who can't speak, and, after helping this man named, the
Comte.
Yeah, the Comte de Saint-Germain. After you help him cheat at a game of cards, one of the people playing alongside him ends up catching on, pulls out his gun, and incidentally ends up shooting the horrible woman you're working for. So the Comte ends up spiriting you away over to the Romani camp that he's staying at, and more or less starts taking you on this roundabout journey throughout all of this, I believe it's Europe, just in general.
I mean, I've played some. So far, it's all been France, but
yeah,
for me. But maybe you escaped. You got outside.
At some point, I did sail to a different island and also played like at the border of Turkey. But yeah, it's a situation where you're basically going to a location, the Comte sits you down and is like, okay, I'm going to teach you exactly how we're going to run this, and basically teaches you various mechanics that you're going to employ during the game. Like, it is something that requires skill, but more than anything else, it is something that just requires you to remember all the rules in your head in terms of what you're supposed to do. Because essentially, you have all the time in the world while you're practicing, but when you're actually playing a game of cards, while you're up to nefarious shit, a meter at the bottom is slowly rising, and that's basically the other party member's suspicion that you're up to something. And if it reaches the top, depending on who you're dealing with, it means either you're going to jail, you're getting thrown out, or you're getting shot. And I noticed from your Steam Achievement 6 that you have been shot at least once.
Stabbed, actually, but yeah.
Yeah.
What's stabbed but being shot very slowly with a knife? I don't know. Sorry. I'll be over here.
I like this game okay, personally. This has helped me put my finger on a thing about Nerial that I find a little frustrating. Where I feel like they love to be very, like, punishing and, like, obtusely lethal, I guess? I don't know how to put this.
Did you get to the point where, like, you were in a situation where the Comte didn't explain everything happening to you?
No, I had a situation where I was playing, like, I got screwed by controls because there's one of them, one of the tricks you do, like, by the way, my biggest beef boils down to the fact that it's called Card Shark, but you're not a card shark, you're like a card servant, you're not the one doing the sharking, and I think that makes it less interesting to me.
Also, Card Shark implies that you're a really good player at cards and you hustle. Well, you are helping hustle people out of their money, but, you know.
I will say, the way that the plot is going, it is bending towards, like, the seeming eventuality that you're gonna break ties with the Comte and just get into it for yourself.
Fair enough, but even so, I would also like to actually play the... I mean, like, as it is, it's WarioWare. Which is fine, but I find it a little disappointing. But that's a good point. But more to the point, like, I got screwed by the controls where there's one where you are, there's one of the techniques you do where you are gathering the cards from a previously dealt hand and you have to gather them in a specific way. And the controls for that, like, are consistent, but don't make any sense. Where they're like, you click on a pile and it says, okay, left or right. And you're like, I don't know what the fuck I'm picking.
Oh, that's easy to explain. Like, you're basically...
I know what it is now. It's, you're choosing what card is last. But it's a really unintuitive way to do that. And I consistently got mixed up. And so I picked one card wrong. I picked, like, one stack. I picked wrong. I picked the wrong direction, not the one I intended to. And because of that, I lost all my money. And then I had to go play three card Monty, and I, because it was showing, like, Xbox inputs and I had a PlayStation controller plugged in, I pressed the wrong button and I got murdered instantly. And then I played a game with Death and I won. The Death revived me with zero money, so I just had to go get murdered again. It was just like, all right, like, this is a level of punishing that is just obnoxious to me.
Yeah, it's definitely a game that, like, expects you to, after you practice it a bunch of times and go into it, like, just execute each time, like, and I find that frustrating too, but in a different way, in that, like, I don't know, this was not the only game I was playing, and there were points where I was just like, okay, I'm gonna play something else for a few days and come back to this, and when I came back to this, I was like, wait a minute, I forget what the in-jog direction is on the analog stick, and which one is, like, there's just several things you can do when you're shuffling, and I had to remind myself through trial and lots of error which did which. Mm-hmm. But it is an incredibly charming game, I will give it that. Like, the art is absolutely gorgeous, this hand-drawn almost 17th or 18th century picture book thing going on. And it also just has a lot of amusing anecdotes for people who, like, are just familiar with the time period in that area. Like, there's a certain point where you meet up with Voltaire, and he's like, oh, cheaters, this is gonna be fun. See if you can trick me. And then later he's like, okay, I have a group that I want you to trick because it'd be fun for me to watch.
19th century Family Guy reference involving Voltaire.
There's a bit where he even says, our previous encounter gave me the foundations for a rather unique satire of Leibnizian optimism. Clearly referencing the fact that, okay, you inspired me to write Candide, and your two options are either puzzled or suspicious.
I'm glad you like that joke, Jen, I guess. Now, if I may, like, my my impression of this game from the way that you two talk about it and what I've seen of it, it sounds like six, you'd have a way, one, you'd probably have a way more fun time with a Mahjong cheating game.
Yes, I would.
But secondly, I feel like there's a little bit of a, obviously they're going for like a specific thing. I'm not going to say, you know, change this, what I'm about to propose is basically a completely different game. But it seems like to me, when you mentioned that this is basically cheating at cards WarioWare, it sounds like it kind of forgets that, like, the like in a show or a game or whatever, if you're following a cheater, they don't cheat all the time. They just cheat at the right time.
Well, yeah, it's basically the mindset I got to that helped me enjoy this is, like, it's not a card game. It is specifically the game where you're doing the Ocean's 11 shit. You're basically part of a scheme going in every time, to the point where you start getting into a scheme so involved that, like, you reach a location thinking that you're going to be playing someone else, but suddenly a bunch of people with guns surround you, and you have to, like, go with the plan, but also the stakes are even stronger if anything goes wrong. And you're kind of going back and forth conversing with other people about how fucked up the situation is. And at some point you get out of that and find out, oh, that was, every single element of that was still in the Comte's plan. Like, he was aware of all of this. And
sure. Yeah. I guess my like counter to that is, like, it could be a fun thing where it's, you are getting in the mindset of the cheater, as in you set up the plan, right? Mm-hmm. You, like, kind of decide when is the time to strike with, like, you know, this one cheat or this one play, I guess. I mean, and also, you know, raising the stakes with, like, more people with guns or whatever is, like, interesting, sure, but, like, I guess here's my question to you two for playing it. Do you ever, is it, like, the prompts for the cheats themselves, are is it just, like, a random shuffle of, like, things? Or is there, like, you gotta pick, or you gotta know the rhythm of, like, this sort of thing?
Yeah, so how
it works... You have to know the
rhythm. Okay.
Yeah, you have to know the rhythm, and basically, there's just two different types of events so far that I've seen. One is you're going to a location, and, like, Comte's just gonna brief you on the strategy you'll be using for these people, just because both of you are involved in it. The other is whenever you're low on money and just have to make some funds off, like, a bunch of old war heroes and stuff, you're at the table and then you get to choose between a few of the tricks you've learned before.
Okay.
I do want to give the game credit that when you're doing the three card Monty, at least you have the option of cheating or not. And there is, like, a degree of, like, sometimes you intentionally don't cheat in order to, like, lure them in further and entrap them further in the trick.
Yeah.
And that's cool. But yeah, I mean, I guess I think Kyrie has hit the nail on the head, which is, to me, it feels so scripted is the wrong word, because scripted is talking in a game mechanic sense and, like, a coding sense, and that doesn't matter, right? But what does matter to me is it doesn't feel like I have any autonomy, and it makes it feel like I'm not fulfilling the role, really. It feels like I am this guy's, like, yeah, this guy's, like, servant or butler, his cheating butler. And he's like, if you would shuffle the cards badly, please. And I'm like, yes, sir.
When it would be
that satisfying.
When it'd be way cooler to do a game where you are playing 10 and you make the decision to be like, okay, I'm gonna do the thing where I take out all the lights so I can get the Yakumon, right?
And I do want, like, actually playing the game as part of it. I do feel like that would help me get into the role. And also the other thing, as I was mentioning, like, the extreme, like, punishing nature of it feels ridiculous to me, right? I was playing five-card Monty with a guy, and I pressed the wrong button, and his suspicion filled all the way up. And he's like, wait a minute, you're cheating. You cheated me out of $5. I'm going to commit murder in broad daylight. Yeah, like, it's $5.
Yeah, most of the time they would just walk away. They would just be like, man, fuck you, dude, and walk away. Or,
and that's a Nereal thing, right? And like, often in Reigns, I mean, sometimes in Reigns, I don't think it works. But often in Reigns, it is played as like an absurdity of like, oh, wow, you were so nice to the church that they burned you alive. And it's like, that's funny because it's ridiculous. But it is inherently there in every Nereal game I've seen where it is just like their default, like, oh, we need this scenario to go bad for you. We'll kill you. And they just have trouble thinking of any other kind of consequence.
I guess what I like about this one, I love it even more than Reigns at times, is just that instead of it being a randomized thing, it is a very specific story being told. Like, I don't know how much you know about the Comte's whole, like, why he's bringing you along to all these things, but it's more than just to make a quick buck. He is something of a revolutionary to some degree, and, like, you end up hurting people that, like, towards what might be seen as a good goal. Like, you end up going to this really old knight who used to know this other person. He's basically so old and out of it that he can't even use the bathroom by himself, and you basically have to cheat him so that he reveals something he swore that he would never reveal. And after that, it devastates him so much that he just stands up and stabs himself straight through with a sword.
Oh, so it's Nereal. He needed something bad needed to happen, so it was death. Sorry, that was flip of me. That was unfair. I do think I do still have that criticism of them, but I also do think it's cool to hear that, like, there were hints of this that I don't know that I was necessarily picking up. I played cards against a rich lady, and she was making hints about some story she couldn't tell from the court, and I just thought it was flavor. If it's going somewhere, that's really cool.
Yeah. I can even tell you something interesting about her off the air, just because it's an interesting reveal that further complicates everything else that's happening with you and the Comte.
Yeah, I'd love to hear that. I mean, I think I like a lot about this game. It's just that the things that I find off-putting, I find really off-putting, and not in a way that is like objectionable, right? Like, not in a way where I'm ready to like crusade against this game, but like the things that feel bad just feel really bad to me.
Yeah, that's totally fair, especially since like the things you're having trouble with are in some regards like the playing of the game itself. And As for me, I like to jump between a lot of games. I kind of wish it was a little bit nicer about reminding you how to do certain things. Like, during any trick, you can hit the start button and get a reminder of each step, but it doesn't remind you of the actual inputs, and that's kind of a bummer.
Yeah, that is frustrating. It did feel... every time you do an in-jog shuffle, that does feel really good, though.
Yeah. The vibration in this game with the controller feels amazing. They make... it really does at times feel like you're messing around with a deck of cards in your hand.
It's that... well, I was going to say that HD rumble, but you were just playing with, like, a Xbox One controller.
Yeah.
But, I mean, not the those aren't good rumble. I don't know. It's fine.
What is HD rumble, but just rumbles that you experience outside? Where the fuck was I going? I don't
know. It's a rumble you can take outside.
It is that. It is that.
Am I going to have to hard pivot this podcast?
Well,
am I gonna have to take this podcast outside?
I take it outside.
Well, you know what else begins with an R?
Well, sure. So when we talked about this podcast, and I was like, let's talk about things other than games, this was mostly inspired by, like, originally I was going to kind of like talk about Drainus, and it's like, oh, that's a cool game, and maybe I'll talk about it elsewhere, but I don't know, let's open, I guess, the floodgates, because I want to talk about a movie. I want to talk about RRR. So RRR is a Indian action film. It was filmed in 2018, released earlier this year in India, and then got like a lot of acclaim in India, and then I think Netflix picked up the like distribution rights worldwide. Like, this movie is notable for a number of reasons, like, and I'll get to the plot of it, but like, this is like one of, I think this is currently the most expensive Indian film ever made, ever. It is also like, I'm trying to think of how to contextualize this, because it's a little bit a lot. So India is a huge country, and so you have, you know, film culture is different in like even the northern and southern parts of that country, and RRR kind of represents like in some ways the meeting of like those two sort of movie cultures together in a movie, and it what results is one of the most bombastic and fun action movies I've seen in a really long time.
So I had a question that stems from wild ignorance, right?
Sure.
I always got the impression that, at least in the United States, that Southern Indian culture was more widely known. Do you, would you be able to comment on that?
Unfortunately, no. Like, okay, most of me talking about this movie, I think, for this pod, will just be me remarking about how, even though I'm not super familiar with, like, Indian film culture, so much of this movie is, like, really fun and fascinates me, and it like transcends like borders in a lot of different ways, and there's like some really intelligent like articles written on like it's kind of messy politics. I kind of don't want to get into it that much, because it's one of those things where some of the choices made in the narrative is like, guys, you probably should have thought about that for a second. But more than anything, it's just a really fun, bombastic movie, and like the title is like a reference to the fact that like the two lead actors are like from two different acting families, and two acting families like never like appear in the same movie like ever. Like, it's just sort of like a thing. In a wildly overly simplistic and like example, it would be somehow as if like Chris Evans, the guy who plays, like, Captain America for, like, all the Marvel shit, would never, ever, ever be in a movie with Henry Cavill, who plays all the Superman, like, movies. And this movie is basically the meeting of those two characters, where they are bros and buddies, and it's a little over 3 hour action film. And it's also, like, it's also in India, was broadcasted in two languages, like, dubbed into two languages, Hindi and Telugu. So that would be that same movie in America that is simultaneously in theaters in English and Spanish, basically. Like, again, wildly oversimplified example that I'm kind of proposing here, but that's kind of, like, where we're at. But I want to talk about the movie itself. So the plot is basically about two guys, Rama Raju and Bem, who are, one is a cop who, it's set in 1920 when the British was occupying India. And the beginning of the movie is one of Bem's, like, I think siblings gets, like, basically taken by one of these colonists, right? And he swears, he goes on this big, he's like going on this big epic revenge quest. Meanwhile, you have Ram, who is part of the like Indian police force, who is also in his own way like doing his own big epic revenge quest, where he is infiltrating the Indian police force that had been like taken over by the British. and trying to like get a huge cache of guns to his like original, like to his village, and he's like super deep undercover, right? And they meet at one point completely unaware of their conflicting goals. They just have this incredible bond where they realize like, oh man, this guy is cool, and they hang out for a while, and then they realize their goals are like conflicting, but then they realize they're actually aligned and come together in a bunch of series of bombastic action sequences.
So this is a movie about fighting British colonists?
Yes.
That sounds fucking fantastic.
It's so good. And also, I'm going to say something that's going to make you in specific, like, want to watch this movie. It is the same... I'm getting the same feelings watching this movie, the same, like, feelings I get when I watch Tokusatsu. Like...
Okay.
It is...
I'm listening.
The effects are a little cheap, but... They like
good.
Yeah, exactly.
Tokusatsu effects are pretty cheap themselves.
I know, Jen.
But you were being like, it is a little cheap, but so I was
because my follow up is that, but the movie leans into the artifice. The like fantastic thing about RRR is that it knows it's not going to make that tiger look any more convincing. At one point, Bem is running through the forest because he's getting a bunch of wild animals because he's going to make a big attack on, like, the British colonists, right? So he's running away from a big, dumb CG tiger. And the tiger looks fake as hell, and the animators know this, so they give it some of the most wild, exaggerated, like, movements, slashes, and shit like that as he is just running through the forest, right? It is, like... It is done in such a way that by it being also cheap in some ways, what I mean here is that they didn't get a bunch of, you know, underpaid, you know, like animators crunching out CG, right? Like, there are sequences in this movie that's just, oh, that's just straight up the actors tying themselves to ropes and swinging under a bridge to rescue a kid from a fire, right? Like, the big action sequence in which the two guys, like, come together is, like, Bem's on, like, this riverbank. And this kid is surrounded by fire in the middle of the river because there was a train exploded and oil is everywhere and flames are creeping all around him. And he sees Rom. And Rom is on this horse. And they look at each other and they realize that, like, through their, like, they don't know each other, but they're going to become the best bros you've ever seen. And they coordinate this stunt in which they tie each other to ropes and jump off the bridge at opposite ends so that they can use the momentum to swing each other to grab the kid and pass it back to each other. And they use, like, this flag doused in water that covers up Bem, and he goes through the flames, and the shot concludes with the two of them arms outstretched into a big handshake. It is fantastic.
Like, I should watch this movie.
This movie just rocks. Just rocks.
Yeah. Personally, my favorite scene was when Beam and Rom end up going to a...
They go to the dance party, right?
Yeah, they go to a ball being held at one of the specific mansions for this evil British Governor Scott. And
to which the actor they have playing the British governor, who is the most deliciously evil person in the movie, they have no ambiguity, by the way. It's not like, oh, they're like conflicted or whatever. No, he's just an asshole. In the trailer, there's a moment in which he's in a car and a tree crashes into the car and he is like lifting into the air like fucking like M. Bison as he grabs a gun, loads it in midair and fires at a dude.
But yeah, The dance scene is great because initially, like, the various Brits around them, like, start to harass them, being like, hey, what are you doing here? You shouldn't be here. But essentially, Beam and Rom work together to, like, show them up by being like, y'all know how to tango. You do not know how to dance like we do. And they just outdance all of them to the point where, like, you see, like, 30 to 50 British men, like, collapsed on the ground And
as these two guys are doing this incredible dance, as the lyrics are basically saying, step up, white boy.
Yeah.
Like, again, this movie, in its, like, you know, sort of revolutionary politics is, like, it's not, I mean, broadly speaking, it's still, like, a big, like, you know, movie made in a capitalist culture, blah, blah, blah. But in terms of, like, it's making more of a statement than a fucking Marvel movie ever would, right? Because the final sequence of the movie is them just shooting the governor, like, the dude from, like, Britain, and the blood splatters on the British flag that says, like, what, Britain will never waver?
No, it splashes on the word, the phrase, the sun never sets on the British Empire.
Yeah. But this dance sequence, which I just put in our voice chat, like, this dance sequence is just so fun. And I think about, like, the language of Indian cinema, because I took a film studies class in college, and I remember at one point, you know, the professor kind of talking about, like, the big dance sequences, the big musical numbers and things like that. And sometimes, like, again, he was doing his best, but, you know, he was an older white guy, like, trying to, like, figure this stuff out, right? And so I find that, like, in these movies, because I've seen a few, like, Indian movies, and it's like the big dance sequences are there to be, like, the characters are experiencing such incredible, powerful emotions that the only way they can, like, really deal with it and express it is just through song and dance. And it's just really charming and fun and engaging because, again, it leads into the artifice of it. It leans into the fact that, like, I don't know, dude, you're just watching a movie. Have a good time, right? Mm-hmm. Like, interestingly enough, my mind kind of drift, like, after thinking about this movie, like, a lot this month, I was thinking about how, do you remember the movie Slumdog Millionaire from, like, the late aughts?
I never saw it, but yes.
So, for those who are unaware, that was a, who did that movie? Let me look that up real quick. I'm trying to remember who did. Slumdog Millionaire. Okay. 2008, 2-hour movie, directed by Danny Boyle, right? And Slumdog Millionaire, it's okay. But some people are saying, like, oh, it's a Bollywood movie or, like, Indian cinema. It's like, it's not. It's more, like, it's more a prestige drama set in India that in the last 5 minutes they have, like, a kind of muted colored dance number because Danny Boyle is like, well, it's an Indian movie, so they have a dance number at the end, right? Like, for most of the movie, it's just a prestige drama about a kid who wins the $1 million on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. Right. Although that movie is pretty funny because they actually got the host of Who Wants to Be a Millionaire at the time, who hosted the Indian version of that show, which is really funny. He's really good in that movie. But more to the point, that movie is very specifically an American idea of what these movies kind of look like. Right. And it's like, oh, the dance number is here out of, like, almost obligation. The final dance number in RRR is more akin to, like, the monologue at the end of Midsummer Night's Dream, where it just kind of reminds you what you saw wasn't particularly real, but, you know, it doesn't matter, you probably had a good time. Although it is pretty cool that at the, like, during that last dance number, like, again, it really hammers home its revolutionary politics to the point where during that last big dance number, they are showing, you know, the characters pointing to characters in Hindu myth who were revolutionaries and actual revolutionaries in Indian history, being like, look, guys, we're just characters in a movie. These are the people that you should admire and try to emulate, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, yeah, it's like a little over 3 hours, but there's a good intermission in the movie. Like, there's a pretty obvious intermission point in which, like, you know, the two guys are at their, you know, biggest conflict, you know, whatever. And then you can kind of take a break. So it's best to kind of watch this movie in, like, parts.
Well, at least if you aren't used to watching, if you need to get up and do other things to, like, break up a three-hour movie.
I think just all movies longer than, like, 2.5 hours or whatever should just have an intermission. Just, like, no matter what type of movie you're doing. Even if I'm used to, like, yeah, I liked Dune. That was, like, I love Dune. It, like, I think its length was earned. Just put in a fucking intermission. Like, come on. Like, I'm on HRT now. I need to go to the bathroom more often, okay?
Like, yeah.
At least in RRR, you get this nice, big, dramatic moment. And then I think in the original theater run and in the, like, Blu-ray version or whatever, you have a nice, like, 15-minute intermission, right?
I don't know if it's... Is it 15?
Or something. Whatever. That sounds extreme. Regardless, it's intermission. More movies need those. But yeah. RRR is just... It's just so incredible to think about how, like... it really just... So much of the movie is drawing from... You know, how deep of a well Indian history just kind of has, because, you know, they've been around for a very long time, and also Hindu myth in specific, because the two characters in this movie are based off of two figures in Hindu myth. And for context, Hindu is one of the oldest religions in the world, or no, oldest known religions, I think, like, recorded. Like, it is... Yeah, they just have a huge wealth of, like, stories that they can just tell and remix and move around and, like, just try new stuff with. I mean, why do you think, like, every American movie is, like, a big Christ metaphor, right? Like,
I don't know. Why is it that...
I mean, think of it. It's like America's been, like, around for, like, what? We're like a baby country. We've been around for, like, 250 years, right?
Yeah, it's... When you go to a city, like, I have unfortunately had instances where I had, like, a tour book or something about an American city that was, like, if you see here, you can see, like, the history of this building. I'm like, this building doesn't have any fucking history. Shut up. You don't know what history is.
Yeah, like it is, but regardless, even though I am fairly ignorant about, like, you know, Hindu myth and, you know, like, Indian history and things like that, I mean, the most I really know is, like, yeah, they're occupied by the British for quite some time, and then I think it was only in recent history, in, like, the past, like, 20 years or something, which Bombay was, like, renamed to Mumbai, which was the original name it had before it got colonized, or something like that. Regardless, it's just such a captivating and fun movie. It has big moments. You got fucking Rem in the trailer or whatever doing DMC5 tricks, in which he stomps the front of a fucking motorcycle, grabs the back wheel after it flips 2 or 3 times. He just swings it around and beats up a bunch of soldiers. It's incredible. One of the capstone scenes of this movie is Rem breaks Ram out of prison, and he, like, grabs the bars of the solitary prison the Ram is in and just rips it out of the ground, puts Ram on his shoulders, hands him 2, like, fucking lever rifles or whatever, as this big, like, song about how much their brotherhood has, like, forged them in flames starts playing as they just shoot hundreds of colonists. It's incredible.
Yeah, I came into this, honestly. I was like, okay, Kira is going to talk about something called RRR. I have never heard of this. And then I pulled it up, and I was like, it's a big budget movie. It's from India, that's interesting, but I don't know, whatever. I want to watch this movie, this sounds really good.
It's really fun!
Yeah?
I can't, like the tokusatsu comparison is, like... I mean, like, tokusatsu is a genre of melodrama, right?
Yeah. I think the for us, right? Mm-hmm. Like for anyone who doesn't have this connection, the spirit of saying something is like tokusatsu is saying that it like it shamelessly embraces both artifice and sincerity, I would mm-hmm. say.
Yeah. Right? I think that's a good way to put it, because any given Kamen Rider season is like they know they're just selling a bunch of toys and they happen to just use that as a vehicle for sincere storytelling.
They're not trying, like, the effects are not trying to trick you. It's mm-hmm. fine that you know you're watching a thing. But also, while we're doing this, we're going to try and, like, speak from the heart. And that's the combination that wins people over, is the effects are fake enough that it makes it more honest.
Right. And, like, the reason I kind of, like, make this Marvel comparison at one point is, like, Disney has spent untold billions on making sure the effects of when Thanos fucking wiggles his, like, index finger look like he looks like the most realistic thing you've ever seen, right?
The most wild example to me, mm-hmm. sorry, just spinning on that,
sure.
is watching their fucking, their, like, Soul, right? Which I have not watched Soul, but I've watched parts of Soul. I've seen clips from Soul.
Mm-hmm.
And you see Soul's representation of a city, and it's just a live-action city, and you've spent cumulatively billions of dollars rendering something you could get with a $10 camera. What the fuck is wrong with you?
Exactly. And so RRR basically looks at that prospect and is like, well, we could spend untold billions on this CG to make this city full of people that are surrounding Rama as he's like doing this thing of like, you know, he's being flailed in the middle of the street and he refuses to bow and like get on his knees, right? It's an incredible sequence, right? You could just render a couple hundred people into a, you know, a thing. You can make the whip animation or whatever look great. Whatever. No. You just have the, like, evil British lady throw Rom the fakest fucking, like, cartoon whip you've ever seen. And in the middle of, like, a street that is full of actual people just watching this event. And he starts singing, like, the song of the earth and rallies the people to action, right? Like, it's great because that's the thing that like really I think won people over and won me over in specific is that by totally acknowledging the artifice of the story it's telling, it can tell a sincere story about two guys just dudes rock. The movie subtitle is basically just dudes rock, and the way they rock is incredible. And like, of course, this sort of thing, like, yeah, they're adapting, like, a real moment in British history, but they're not gonna fucking belabor the point. It's just gonna be like, yeah, these guys are evil, and they suck, and it's awesome to see these dudes kick their ass.
Yeah.
RRR is great. Like I said, I think it is available on Netflix. There are other ways to, of course, get it. I want to get a Blu-ray copy of this at some point. I think you can import Blu-ray copies. I don't know if fairly easily, but like there are ways to obtain it. But yeah, I loved it. It was so fun. I want to get the soundtrack too because the music is just great.
Well, we'll have to, you know, I feel like that was a great way to inaugurate us covering more than just games with something that is like outside of our normal like range of what we look at, but mm-hmm. not anywhere near outside of our wheelhouse. As
no,
it turns out.
Yeah. It turns out like a big action movie with cheap effects about dudes rocking is like, oh, that's right up. That's what I want.
I do appreciate it when dudes rock.
Yeah. RRR, Rude's rocking something. I don't know.
All right. Well, we're going to give up on that.
We're going to give up on that.
Terrible
idea. But let's go into like a better idea. Also, since this is coming out towards the end of the month, I think it's a good time to bring up like one project that you really liked working on in the month of June that you think people on the site, like, you know, you're listening to this on the Scanline Talks feed. What are some things you want to just, like, say, hey, I'm really proud of this thing I made, like, this month?
Mm-hmm.
I can go first if you want, unless y'all have your answers, but whatever.
I don't know. I enjoyed our discussion of the first volume of School Zone Girls earlier. I thought it was... I always appreciate it when I'm in a somewhat interesting position where I'm the only one who something... I'm the only one who actually ended up enjoying something to a certain degree. So it's interesting to just have conversations like that, and like, I feel like it makes me better at articulating myself and explaining why it's working for me, even if it's not working for you.
I'm going to take a moment to promote it because this is the best time to get in. This is the best time to engage. Also, to break kayfabe. So, last month, we covered The Melancholy of Haruhi Suzumiya on our patron $1 show, our sort of our main show, our banner show,
right.
Oops All Anime. And Nick and I, co-host of The Bottle Crow... And the Bottle Crow, the co-host of Bottle Crow.
The J.J. Abrams reboot of Bottle Crow. The Bottle Crow.
And just generally engagingly eclectic weirdo, Nick. We had the terrible idea of what if we covered... There's a part in season 2 called The Endless Eight where they're stuck in a time loop for 8 episodes. And we were like, what if we... covered it 8 times, each time pretending we'd never done it before. And so we're 6 as this comes out, we're 6 episodes in. So you've got you can catch up and then catch the last 2. We will break the cycle. And I am really surprised at what we've managed. Like, Nick and I are the kinds of people where if we have a bad enough idea, we'll do it no matter no matter what. But we've gotten some things out of doing that I actually think are kind of amazing. I think, like, you know, we got a message from a friend of ours, Alan, who's been listening. And, like, the moment in the 5th episode where it's like, oh, and I know exactly what the next line is going to be. 6 is going to complain about Haruhi's definition of espers. And instead what I said was, I'm downloading the Charlie's Philly Steaks rewards app. Because the episodes just go places because we're like, hey, listen, we have already done the work of covering this several times over. We could do whatever we want. And I think the results are really fun.
Yeah. And easily for me, my favorite thing, this was like the biggest in a weird way, Embers of War episode 0 kind of, in a roundabout way, represents like years of my own work kind of coming together all at once. Like I'm just gonna brag a little bit. Like the fact that I was able to like not only coordinate like a, you know, tabletop group to play in this game for this session, I also coordinated with Alan to do the like framing device stuff. While also at the same time, scripting that out, figuring out the layout in my head of like, okay, this music cue is going to go here, this like song is going to play here or whatever, because, oh, also this like tabletop game has a fucking OST and sound effects. And it's like, I pushed myself in such a way in which I'm so glad that like my, you know, couple of years like working, you know, with y'all on Scanline has like the fact that I was able to like put something out that I'm glowing. I love Ember Zero, like episode 0. I think it's one of the best things that like I've like made like in a long time, and I'm really happy and proud of that.
Yeah, that's I think I listened to that because there were parts of it I hadn't even been on, you know, because of that episode 0 and how it was formatted. And it's a really cool thing. It is the kind of cool where I messaged Kyrie while listening. I was like, you're never fucking doing this again.
Oh, yeah. No, no,
every
no.
episode will be late if you do this again.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Later episodes are going to be like, it's like, since my idea of this like podcast is like, oh, this is basically an anime or a radio show that I've unearthed that I'm trying to localize, right? It's like you put all your budget in the big like premiere, right? And then you get a couple where there are gonna we have to do a onsen episode that's like the cheapest and fastest thing I've ever made, you know. Like, just like the framing devices, the storyteller, and the passerby being like, and then they go to an onsen. We don't know why. Just the budget is weird this week. Anyway, here's the episode. But if nothing else, like, I genuinely don't, like, sometimes, like there's like a version of this tweet that has gone around for a long time where it's like, you know, someone comes up to an artist and says, like, hey, can you draw a picture, right? And it takes them 5 seconds, and they hand it to the person and say, oh, that'll be $500, right? And the person says, hey, why are you charging $500? It took you 5 seconds. And they say, no, it's because I spent 20 years practicing and training and getting good enough that I can do it in 5 seconds. And I feel like in some ways, Ember Zero represents, like, yeah, I put it together in a couple of days, but that took years of me learning these, like, processes and editing tons of podcasts and just engaging with a lot of different media to figure out the, like, there was a lot that went into it before I even just started recording that thing. So, really proud and happy about that thing.
Yeah.
But I think that'll do it for the inaugural refresh rate, which is on the same feed as playlist, but it's not playlist anymore. It's refresh rate now.
It's refresh rate now. Like, it's all this scanline terminology, this like old TV stuff and new TV, because refresh rate still actually matters.
Yeah, it's But yeah, so, yes, go ahead.
Kyria, why don't you take it away and tell people where folks can find you and stuff on the internet?
All right, you can find me at KyriaAPage on Twitter.com. That is where I post and promote things. And also, you know, me and Jennifer, we just started back up Ultimate Despair Reprise. We have started the Danganronpa 3 anime coverage, and that's been a lot of fun so far. So you can find that at YouDespairCast, also on Twitter.
All right, Jen, where can people find you?
I'm on Twitter at JBU3. Most of my stuff is also on ScanlineMedia.com or Patreon.com/ScanlineMedia. I also host a narrative gaming book club podcast called Novel Not New, a Trend Podcast, which you can find at readinggames.online. Our upcoming episode will be on AI, the Somnium Files Nirvana Initiative. And, I'm really excited to talk about that. Really nervous about what Six will think, but we'll see.
We'll see. I'm not saying that to be coy. I don't know yet.
has not booted up the game yet.
I patched it. You can find me on Twitter at SixDetmar, SIXDETTMAR. My DMs are open for any, you know, thoughts, feedback you've got for us and for the site. I hope you folks will take care of yourselves. I hope you have a good one in a weird time that we live in. And I also hope we'll see you next month.
Yep. See ya.
Later.